Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Veep After Show. We're going to be breaking down the series finale. I don't know how we're already here, 7 seasons later. Join us tonight to say goodbye to all of our favorite, just terrible human beings. We also have a very special guest, so stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Guys, Veep fans in the house.
We got the balloons for Selena this time.
We did, yeah. She finally got her balloons. We should have had balloons for the finale.
We really should have.
Oh,
I got something much better than balloons.
We dropped the ball on that one. Sorry, guys. Welcome back. I'm going to be talking about the season finale tonight. I'm Amy Maestri. Very excited not only to have the lovely Mina with me again tonight.
Hey, everyone.
But we also have our special guest, Ben Makowitz, who does Turner Classic Movies, also works on The Young Turks. Thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here. Love Veep. Thrilled to be talking to you guys about it.
Awesome. Yeah, I know, Mina has worked with you a little bit and got to know you and was like, you know, she's a big politics fan, big comedy fan. You were like right up the same alley. You're like, uh-huh.
Yep. Mina likes to laugh. And, right. and there's a lot of laughter that can be done at politics, as Veep has showed us. So, well, interesting, like a lot of laughing at politics, but like no policy on this show. Like they never talk about anything, no things that might make, you know, life better for anyone. I think it's one of the many strokes of genius on the show.
Definitely. They talk about how things could get worse a lot. I feel like that.
Yeah, sure. Right. But I mean, there are no actual debates about anything. There's just bargaining, right?
Yep, that's
true. Everything is a commodity.
All about the deal. Well, yeah, I think so. Tonight, we're just going to kind of break down this final episode. Lots to talk about in that. And then we'll get into, you know, breaking down a little bit more about the series as a whole. You know, any favorite moments or favorite episodes, seasons, things like that. And then we'll have some time to chat with Ben a little bit more later, too. So I think it'll be a fun show tonight. But let's see. So the last episode really left us off with Selena still under fire for the droning of elephants after she thought she was off the hook.
Yeah, not Muslims, but the elephants.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, animals.
God
animals
forbid.
Are more important.
Right,
yeah.
God forbid. Richard is now governor. Jonah infected the entire world, basically, with one form of a disease or another. And then we're launched right into the convention. So what were kind of some expectations going into this episode?
Go ahead, Mia.
You know, I thought the Meyer scandal would be an even bigger deal than what it was. I thought it would play out completely differently. I thought that there would be, like, this huge deal with collusion with China, and I thought that would play out differently as well. So I was surprised that those issues were kind of put on the back burner.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, that was sort of, yeah, because we were set up that China was going to deliver the election for Selena. And, of course, we don't know. Maybe they did, right? Because, really, they couldn't, tougher to deliver the primary, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the theory being that she sort of betrayed Tibet and the general, and, of course, she won, right? She beat, we don't see any. The confidence that they have to move ahead and move through time, which they did throughout this season, I admire that. It wasn't quite as dramatic as The Wire, but there was very little hand-holding.
Yeah.
Like as they sort of developed the narrative structure of each episode, they'd say to their to the viewers, you'll figure this out. Like,
yeah.
and they'll have some, but they don't hold your hand through, here's what you missed. But then after like 4 or 5 minutes, you're like, oh, okay. Many things have happened,
yeah.
Right? And here we are suddenly, now here we are at the gym, right? We went from one episode where she's, you know, Julian Assange, right? And then that's over and she's the nominee, or at least at the convention.
Exactly, yeah. They really do. I mean, the way that they're able to tie everything in like that and really just dive back into an episode and, like you said, not really hold your hand and just throw you into that world again. Mm-hmm. And, man, I feel like the writers just had a ball with this episode with their insults. They're always coming strong, but there are a couple tirades in this one that was just like,
yeah,
Woo, so Selena had a few. Everyone was going off in this.
The one with the chief of staff. With Jonas, chief of staff, and Selena. Or not Jonas, chief of staff, but...
Tom Jones?
Yes, Tom Jones. Yeah. Chief of staff.
Oh, right, which was really one of the I think the best actors working today. I think Rae Seahorn from Better Call Saul. She is she's unbelievable. I mean, I think she can sort of do everything. I don't know. You guys watch Better Call Saul, but she's unbelievable on that show. And so I was thrilled to see both Michael McKean and Rae Seahorn in this final season of Veep. But yeah, so right, that was a great moment. But that, of course, there was some strategy in that, right? I mean, that was and again, we don't get the next scene, which was her convincing Rae Seahorn to betray Hugh Laurie. We just learned the next day that it worked.
And
right.
It ties in perfectly with the hashtag MeToo movement and the hashtag Time's Up movement. So what I love about the show is how all these things are so relevant to what's happening in the present day. And it really feels like they've predicted things that are happening right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, the parallels have been pretty impressive this season. And especially, too, I mean, they took the year off with Julia Louis-Dreyfus battling breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And so the timing of this just kind of lined up pretty perfectly for so many of the things that are happening now and versus what was happening on the show.
Right.
I think the show got, it seems to me, and I haven't, you know, I don't recall the exact tone of the first five seasons. I mean, we know it was hilarious and consistently funny and edgy and cutting. But it does seem like the last two seasons ramped it up more than a notch, like jumped forward two or three, whatever our unit of measure is, right? And because we had suddenly, by season six, entered into the Trump's world, right? I don't know when they shot season six, but certainly the campaign was at least happening. We were sort of aware of who Donald Trump was. Mm-hmm. And that gave them, it appears, a number of avenues which they explored in creating this Jonah character, this sort of young Trump character, with a lot of the attributes, without any of the success. Although maybe Trump didn't have any of the success either. But without any of Trump's perceived success, they created Jonah. And then they also made Selena. She, of course, everybody had a little bit of Trump in them.
It's true. If we thought one was terrifying, just wait until we build a whole ensemble of them.
Yeah.
So let's kind of break this down by character because we have so many different moving parts in this one. We'll save Selena for last, I think, just because, you know, she's the queen. Let's admit it. Tom Jones comes back. We're talking about his chief of staff, but did you guys expect to see him in this?
No, but I kept thinking, where is Tom James? How is there only one episode left? And the fact that he would time something like that perfectly and make a comeback, it's so brilliant in a sense because you avoid all getting into, like, you know, the campaigning and the campaign trail, and then people start to miss you because you let everyone else bomb and do a terrible job, and then you come in as this Christ-like savior. Oh, I'm going to save Washington now. Now Tom James appears. So he, like, kind of came in at the perfect moment, and I thought, oh, this is done. What? I can't believe this is the twist Veep is going with. This is crazy.
The amount of time that the world of political pundits, of which intermittently throughout my life I have been, and which my father was too, in a world I grew up in Washington, D.C., the amount of time that we have spent sort of daydreaming, almost fantasizing, fetishizing a brokered convention, right? There are no brokered conventions. They don't have a world. I was like, but what if? And the first bout, second bout. No, I get it, and it'll happen probably one day again. And so we got to see it here. Like, it was so exciting because the amount of time I've spent with my friends, both professionally and just over drinks, over coffee, talking about, well, the Mario scenario where Cuomo comes in at the last second. You know, none of it ever happens, but it was nice to see in Veep.
And you know, it's funny too because I feel like even the stuff with Trump that's been happening, we've all also been getting kind of like a political education these past few years. Like before the Trump era, I kind of felt like, yeah, I have a good grasp on politics, I pay attention to current events, but then all these scenarios happened that it was like, oh, what if this happens, what if that happens, that were kind of presented. So yeah, getting to see this almost like dream nightmare, I guess, of a brokered convention.
Hugh Laurie, great actor, and but I like that moment where he sort of comes in and confronts Selena in the room, and how could you do this? Like what she did by turning Rae Seahorn against him, and getting her sitting next to a Gloria Allred stand in, and have like. But his outrage was, I mean, like, dude, okay, I guess this was worse than anything you've done to her, but you have done to each other. I mean, Tom James is betrayed her again and again and again and used her attraction to him against her when effective. Like, nobody should have any sympathy for Tom James being betrayed.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys. I felt this was a very satisfying scene for me, just seeing him lose it.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I felt like it was par for the course, but it just made me hate Selena, and I never hate Selena, because this episode was like, wow, the lengths she'll go to become president just for this title, the promises that she'll make and then turn against just to secure that office, and then once she's there, she's not happy.
Isn't it weird, though, about what it says about us, like who we are as people, that you didn't hate Selena? I mean...
Yeah,
of course.
We still liked her, even though
she's so
hateful.
Put somebody on TV and you make an attractive, likable, spectacularly talented, one of the great actors of her generation, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and have her play Selena, and then you're rooting for her, right? Even though she's literally a terrible human being. The worst parent in the history of television, right? The worst. She's just brutal to her daughter. For 7 seasons, she was brutal to her daughter. Brutal to everyone else. Again, that little moment with Ben where he says that, and when he's lying in bed, Kevin Dunn, and he says, you know, I don't tell my wife and kids I'd like to have a little. And she's like, I don't know. It's okay. I've never met her.
You know, After that long.
And, you know, and how horrible she was to Mike. How horrible she was to Amy. She fires Dan after sleeping with him. I mean, she's the...
And Gary. Let's not forget about Gary.
I don't know who I said for Gary. I think I may have said Tony. But yeah. No, I mean, Gary, she's the worst person there is on the planet. But yet, you like her. I did, too.
Yep.
She has some charm to her. I don't know what it is.
She has charm. Charm goes a long way. We were reviewing Game of Thrones yesterday and that, you know... But Jamie's charming, so you want Jamie to do the right thing because he's handsome and charming. Yeah.
Yep. Julia Louis-Dreyfus just the whole time just put on a clinic for how to play a character like this, I feel like, for 7 seasons. But let's jump into a couple of the other character storylines before we go into Selena. So Jonah, what to say about Jonah? He's right, as right as you can be, I guess, about Muslim math was his crusade. And then, of course... twist of fate, it ends up working to his advantage. I think a highlight in this for me was seeing Amy just really go off the handle on Selena when she realized that she had kind of won, but then having to backtrack later on, like, oh no, I helped Jonah Ryan get into a place of power. So what were you guys thinking about Jonah in this episode?
This actually told me way more about Amy than it told me about Jonah. Like, it really shows you that Amy, to the core, is a good person that stands with her values, even when she goes against it. When she realizes the damage and destruction that she has created, she immediately backs up. She's not like, oh, let's go with this, I'll have power. She's like, no, what is this going to mean for our country? She actually cares.
First, I want to say something sexist because, I mean, she looked amazing, right? I mean, that was deliberate, right? This sort of the, after all those years of you know, the way that the Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Tony Hale mocked her, right? It was nice for her to have a little moment, I think. So she has principles, but her plan was never that Jonah would actually achieve anything. Her plan was to get Selena. Mm-hmm. Was to stop Selena. That was her. So that was a nice moment when both Gary Cole and how do we say her last name? Chlumsky. For both of them, when they are faced with the moment that Jonah was actually going to be the second most powerful or one step away from being the most powerful person in the world, that they both were ready to draw the line. And then, of course, neither of them did. Right? Because you still, neither of them walked away. They both helped make that happen.
Yeah, and then, I mean, when Selena's full force ahead, there's not much I think anyone can do to stop that anyways, but...
I thought when, significantly, just that what ended with Jonah getting the vice presidency, when Kevin Dunn is in the hospital bed and he says to her, you know what to do, and she sort of cries, and because he's trained her, I thought that meant to bargain to be the Veep. And I thought this show was going to end with her back as the vice president. Like, I thought that it's called Veep. That would be sort of – but that's – as the shit, she has no political future. So she saves some political standing by becoming the only person to serve vice president, you know, under 3 different presidents or whatever the hell it was. You know, and – but it turned out, no, she knew exactly how to sort of cut – Tom down, and then she made the deal for Jonah, when it had to be made. But then we got that moment of Jonah on stage after they get nominated, and his incredibly dumb wife, she's smarter than he is, but she comes up on stage, and he uses the balloons as boobs, and you're like, holy, this is, right? And who's up there on stage with Selena? Nobody.
Yeah.
Not her kids, not her staff members, right? Mm-hmm. Not Tony Hale, not Gary, right? So nothing. She's got nothing. Nobody. Andrew apparently alive. We got that little glimpse of Andrew in Norway, right? Yeah,
that's all we get. Yeah, no, to kind of piggyback on Selena getting Veep, I kind of started to think that too when they were talking about offering it to Jonah, and her argument was like, no, like, there's, if you're Veep, there's nowhere. You're trapped in a bot, like, just basically talking about the torture that it was for her to be Veep. Right. So I was like, oh, God.
I'm sure that putting her ending as vice president was, I suspect, significantly discussed, unless mm-hmm. they knew all along that the sort of blind ambition for power leaves you, unless they sort of knew that they were going to have this 24 years later moment. But I loved also Jonah having a moment of genuine manhood and standing up like, no, I'm not going to take it, until everybody yelled at him. Fine. I'll be vice president. Shut up. Stop yelling at me.
I was hoping Selena would become president, and I thought when I was watching this episode that she would become president. I did not expect it to be in this way. I thought that someone would have to drop out of the race because of some huge scandal. I thought something was going to happen with Kemi's character, because remember, like, she had the second most... the second highest number of points in
of delegates
in that race. So I thought there was something that would happen with Kemi that would make Selena the nominee by default.
Right.
I didn't think that she would actually win it in this way by selling out all of her, you know, core values that she never believed in to begin with.
There's no core values. Yeah. There,
we don't even know what she really believes.
Nothing.
We don't know. I don't think she believes anything, so long as it serves her to become president.
She sold Tibet. Gay marriage, and what else? What else did she...
I actually have a list of everything she sold.
Yeah.
And gay marriage, you know, the whole thing with the trans
fracking,
LGBT bathroom
assault
law.
Assault rifles,
federal land, slavery-free textbooks for Texas.
That's right, slavery-free textbooks.
Dare we have the correct history of what happened in our nation. And then, obviously, with the Meyer Fund, she allowed Gary to take the fall for that, which is mind-blowing. And also selling out by having Jonah Ryan on the VP ticket, because then you're, you know, by relation to him, you are endorsing everything that he endorses, including, you know, the Muslim math.
Yeah, Muslim math and anti-vaccine. And,
yes.
Right, yeah.
So.
No, exactly. I think.
Lot.
Well, now that. Perfect segue. Let's jump into the Selena meat of the episode, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think to jump on what you were saying about Kemi, too, I feel like we had talked about it a lot this season. We kind of thought there was going to be a bigger payoff somewhere with Kemi.
Yeah.
They were setting it up a little bit more early on in the season, and I think we kind of kept waiting, and then they would mention it, kind of push it to the side.
It's
know, Ben, were you thinking the same?
I feel like Kemi got a movie. You know, like halfway through, and they were like, we'll just write around it. You need to come and give us a couple of days so we can get you in the background. And, you know, because they shot her like on TV, so it's literally like she didn't have to be with the rest of the crew. So I don't know. I felt like that. Yes, I thought they were headed somewhere. And then, you know, anyway, they're certainly capable of getting wherever they need to be. But I wouldn't be surprised if it turned out, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if I'd found out that, like, Kemi was in Endgame. You know, and they were like, oh, it's a really big role. We're not going to keep it from you. We'll write around it. Don't worry.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
She was like the only nominee that wasn't hateable.
That's probably
in my opinion.
That's probably why they're like, you're too nice. We don't need you anymore.
Yeah, there was nothing. All we find out is that she becomes president later on after Selena.
Two terms.
Yeah, two terms.
Two terms for her and two terms for Richard Splett.
Yes.
Yeah.
So... The one thing I noticed that was kind of killing me throughout this episode, too, I actually thought they were going to kill Ben. For a minute, I really thought. I was just like, oh, my gosh.
After 8 heart attacks.
Well,
he's
like 12,
Cheney,
I think. 12. Right?
12,
yeah.
12 heart attacks.
Yeah, 12,
he was already on number 12.
Yeah, with luck, I'll have 12 more. They did kill him at least 24 years later. He is dead, but nobody knows that. You know, I just can't. I mean, Selena on stage by herself, and then we get the 6 months later, and she's in the Oval Office, and she's surrounded by, you know, the new chief of staff and by Ray Seahorn. These are people she doesn't know. right? None of her people were there. There's no Tony Hale. There's no Gary Cole. She's got Sue outside. It's nice to see Sue back.
I know.
That was
so
good.
Happy for her.
But nobody else who matters to her. No Marjorie, no Catherine, no Andrew, nobody no Amy, right? And she's petty about Amy, but she would kill to have Amy there.
Yeah.
Right? Amy's her friend. No Mike, who's again, the hammering cable news for, that Mike McClintock becomes a huge star. I mean, Matt Walsh, so brilliant, but, he's a moron, right?
That's why it was interesting to see throughout this episode the progression of it. It was literally just like people getting knocked off left and right. What way was it going to be that they were no longer there for Selena? Ben's health, Kent just had enough of her finally. When Kent says, fuck the numbers.
Right.
That's bad.
Yeah. Right, but throws his tie away, and then we see him 24 years later. He's got an alpaca farm. It's awesome. My college girlfriend has an alpaca farm, by the way, apropos of nothing. The best was Dan. And the only thing that I called correctly in the show was when we went to 24 years later, I was like, Dan's going to look 1 year older, right? Dan is aged. Not at all. He looks like we're in the same suit, right? Everything's fine. His wife was born in 2019. He's like, yeah, you got any properties in Laguna Beach? Here, I'm your guy. Right?
Perfect.
Real estate makes sense for him. He's really good at selling things.
That's true. Well, hey, he said
ideas.
He said it at the end. I got to get out of politics. So
yeah.
He did. Let's talk a little bit about a very classic Selena episode in that she just traded and bargained for everything. Were there any moments in this one, like kind of cringeworthy ones for you, of the things that she did to get where she was? Obviously, the Gary one is a huge one, I think, for everyone. But was there anything else along the way that kind of one that stood out for you?
Gay marriage. She's been so cruel to her daughter. But here's this moment, even after she'd done the accidental stand against the North Carolina bathroom law, she backpedals on that, and then she bargains away a gay marriage for Buddy Calhoun's support. And of course there's a direct correlation there. That's a Dick Cheney moment, where Dick Cheney, after years of having been supportive of his daughter, then wasn't when it came time to support his other daughter, right, in her race. I think at that point may have been for the Senate, but and now she's in the House, Liz Cheney. So when the moment came to really take a stand for your kid, she doesn't. So, I mean, it's sort of confirmation of what you don't want to admit, Mina, right? Which I didn't either, which is... No, she's awful.
But people always
justify. She's
funny,
but she's awful. Right.
Yeah. People always justify their bad actions because I don't think people really like to think of themselves as bad people. So with Selena Meyer, we see her justify that action and say, "No, honey, like politicians always make promises. We're not going to necessarily, deliver on that promise." She's trying to justify the promise that she made by saying, "No, I won't deliver on it."
I love politics, and I like, seeing how the sausage is made. I don't mind the horse trading, and I don't mind talking about the horse race, and we're all told, it's just horse race. Well, the horse race is interesting, right? We had the Kentucky Derby was a couple of 10 days ago. We were all into it, right? Why? It's a horse race. It's fun. The Preakness is another horse race. We're going to watch that, too. But politics is—and that horse trading matters. But at some point, right, you can't betray a core principle, and that's where people make decisions about you. Like, what are you willing to betray? And she was willing to betray Tibet. Standing there accepting the what was it? The Nobel, not the Nobel Peace Prize, the Nobel.
I think they call it the Junior Peace Prize.
Right, the Nobel Peace Prize Award. And she's delivering that speech, but it didn't matter to her, right?
And she reads the rest of the teleprompter, but doesn't read it out loud. And it's like, all the people that you will kill, their homes
that's
destroyed.
Right.
Let's just fast forward
just
through
scroll
this.
To the end,
I think this season was really escalation at its best for seeing just how far she will go. Because they've set that precedent from the very beginning that she's ruthless. She's going to do whatever it takes to get herself in a position of power and stay in a position of power. But from the beginning, they started with fire. And then, when it comes to the Tibet thing, you're like, oh, they can't get any worse than that. And then they do. And I think that's why Ben's a great point about, the thing with Catherine and Marjorie. That's when it's something that's family related, that's going to affect so many people, but also her actual daughter, her grandson at that point. Can you get any worse than that?
And that paid off then when Catherine is legitimately overjoyed at her mother's death.
It was the first time in seven seasons we've seen her purely just happy.
Right. and Clea DuVall as Marjorie. I mean, there's really no I hesitate to call some people out because I literally don't think there was a weak link in this cast, right? They are so good. Yep. So funny, all of them. But Clea DuVall as Marjorie was so good in everything that they asked her to do.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen a better straight man.
Yeah.
The way that she delivered on every single line.
Well, I mean, if there is a better straight man than Clea DuVall, it's Gary Cole. I mean, who has, you know, invented it, at least in the modern era. They're all perfect. They were all so good throughout.
And, you know, that was even a very telling moment, too. We saw Marjorie kind of lose it for the first time. I don't think we've ever really seen her lose her composure until that moment again, where it was kind of that culminating, like, she can't get any worse than that. And if Marjorie's even going to lose her composure at that point, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. I think because she's always so calm, cool, and collected, even in times of crisis, even when she was being recorded, you know, just a couple episodes
ago. It was always just, ma'am, please. Yeah.
Are you recording me?
Yeah, exactly.
She's always been so calm.
I'm curious whether any of these people, whether we are going to see, and forgive me if we have, whether we're going to see Anna Chlumsky or for that matter, Gary Cole, for, you know, Matt Walsh, Tony Hale, if any of these people are going to be able to, is Sarah Sutherland who played Catherine, are they going to be in, are we going to see them in dramatic performances? Mm. Like if they are Timothy Simons, I mean, who's just unbelievable. I mean, he owned every scene, dominated every scene with these other great actors. Can they do, you know, have they cast themselves for life in comedies?
I feel like if you can do comedy, you can do drama.
That's
because
right.
Comedy is getting to the core of the truth.
That's
and
right.
What
I
makes
agree.
Things.
Yeah, if you can do comedy, I mean, they're all capable of it. I don't doubt that for a second. It's a question of whether a casting director will hire them. But yeah, you're right. People who aren't funny can't be funny. People who are funny can make you cry.
Can be. Yes, definitely.
And it's always such a different ball game too. Robert De Niro, one of the greatest actors of all time, is the worst person I've ever seen on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
I'm pretty sure Tom
Atrocious.
Hanks is the best actor of all time.
And
Tom
R.I.P. Tom.
R.I.P.
24.
So I always wonder for a show like this, right? And, you know, HBO's got this relationship with Tom Hanks. And do they call him, right? Do they have to say, hey, look, Tom, just a little heads up. We're going to play with your death in 25 years, right? Just so you know, we're just going to have a little mock tie. It's going to be super praiseworthy. We're going to give you a couple more Oscars, take you from 2 to 4. I think we gave him some more kids. I don't know whether that's that. I don't know if he has 4 now. But it's good news that he's still with Rita. You know, it was great. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. So that was the – but I'm curious. Like, do they feel like – they got to give a little heads up to Tom Hanks, or they could just pull that off without him?
We're HBO. We don't need to tell Tom Hanks that we're killing him in 24 years.
There was only one other Tom Hanks reference in the entire season, and that was when Gary and Selena were having a major argument, and Gary's like, I'm your Wilson. You know, I've always been your Wilson.
I missed that. That
all
was good.
Tom Hanks that we've gotten.
Oh, well, speaking of Gary and being her Wilson, yikes. That was a tough one to watch at the end. Did either of you see that coming for him having to be the fall guy?
No, you figured. I mean, they literally said we got to get somebody, and you know, it was either they tried to have it be Marjorie. And Marjorie's too smart for it.
Yeah.
By the way, that gave a great moment when Marjorie deliberately got herself fired for saying her eyes looked puffy, which was great. Very little nice moment where Cal, I love you, right? And then Gary looks in the bag, and he's like, "I'll see you." Oh, this is better. Oh, the tampons are vertical. great little moment. No, it was, you know, it's just, again, it's a sign of how there's nothing, she, you know, our example of betraying her family could easily be replaced by betraying Gary, the person most loyal to her, as evidenced by essentially the final scene of the show with any of the characters that we really know, that she sent him away to prison. She betrayed him. She never saw him again. And he brings her favorite lipstick to her casket and he cries.
Ugh. That scene broke my heart more than anything in this entire series.
Yeah.
I felt so much pain just watching, you know, the sincerity in his face and, you know,
it was legitimately emotional. Yeah,
it was. I definitely did not see the emotional depth that they were going to hit in this one coming, especially towards the end, which let's just kind of jump into that because Richard obviously plays a role in that later. I know that was one thing I was like, I think he's going to be president. I wasn't sure when, but I knew he was going to be president at some point. And speaking of delivery, all of his lines, all of his timing, his cadence on everything was always just so perfect.
Same thing with Sam Richardson, who played Richard. Like, his he's so good, right? He's so perfect. Everybody is so perfect at this, is that, you know, and I don't want Sam Richardson forced to do only comedy the rest of his life. But that said, if you see a movie or a TV show, whatever comes next for any of these people, any of them, right? From Timothy Simons to Anna Chlumsky, Matt Walsh, Reed Scott, right? All these guys. I think all of us will go see it.
Right? Oh, 100%.
I'll see, oh, Sam Richardson's in it. Well, he'll be funny.
Sold.
Mm-hmm. Right, yep. Sold. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about 6 months later really quickly, and then we'll jump into the ending to kind of wrap stuff up. I liked coming full circle that she hired Tom's chief of staff onto hers.
Yeah.
Loved that. But
made me think, actually, sorry to interrupt, but that made me think that they had an agreement. If you speak out against Tom James, you become my chief of staff.
Probably.
That's what I thought watching
that. Right. Of course. I'm sure that was true.
At the very least, an unspoken one of, like,
right.
Which may have been why, when she said that thing to Anna Chlumsky, to Amy, like, you know, you irritated me, so you're Jonah's chief of staff, right? Because you'd figure that she'd hire Amy for that job. But no, she had to give it to Racy.
Yeah, you bothered me. Deal with that. Right. I'm hiring her. She helped me.
I made a deal. Right.
Exactly. And I think that was really the culmination of seeing everyone just getting picked off through this entire episode. Of her in the Oval Office by herself. She's got Sue back, which was, again,
fun to see. They weren't picked off. She picked them off.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. She shot her own staff. Right? This friendly fire killed all of them.
I felt like the Trump, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired, to everyone he's done that with in his staff. It definitely mimicked that.
Yeah. And then, I mean, to see that final scene of just really seeing her calling for Gary and then realizing, wait, Gary's not here. And then her just by herself.
And just the manner in which she reaches, she grabs, you know, with the Israeli prime minister. She's like, someone I can talk to.
Yep, yeah. So from there, we just get that quick glimpse of her being, you know, very much all alone. And then to 24 years later, did not see this coming at all. I kind of assumed there would be a time jump. I didn't realize this far in advance. Mm-hmm. I feel like, though, I didn't see Selena, you know, it ending with her funeral, but every single character, what a like perfect kind of ending for all of them character-wise.
Yeah, it was a great.
Yeah.
Really great.
It actually hurt that they decided to go with that choice of her having a funeral and passing away, but I think it was the best way to demonstrate everyone's relationship to her as a character on the show. There's no better way to do that. I just wish they didn't kill her off. And she's only in her 70s, right? It's 24 years later, so.
I think that they, I sensed that we'd get that because why else do we have her, you know, we spent about 5 or 6 minutes earlier in the season talking about who would come to her state funeral, right? And all the people she banned were there, every one of them. Like, so even that was done incompetently. Right. So even, you know, she didn't want President Montez there. Right. And she was there. Right.
He's giving the eulogy.
Right. 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 So, and, you know, so even again, even that she certainly didn't want Tom James there. And of course he was there. Yeah.
And I mean, really right down to the last second of just incompetent people around her. They can't even get her casket into the crypt.
That's right. Yeah, right.
So right down to the end, I feel like they did such a good job of, like, pulling on the heartstrings in this episode, but also really keeping to what the theme of the show has been and the premise. And Mina, to your point, of really putting out the best way to, like, show where these characters came from.
Right.
And I think they gave us a little bit, too, which was wonderful, of Selena's sort of insane and debilitating and destructive in the end, self-absorption, certainly relevant to the current commander-in-chief.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
But the that there at the end, right, we get this sort of touching moment with Tony Hale, right? And I mean, it's really beautiful, right, that he brings her the lipstick, and it's totally touching. And then they can't get her casket in, right, so that's a little funny. And then in this moment where you think you're going to get some speech from Mike, from Matt Walsh, we cut away. And so even – and you just imagine Selena again, her complete self-absorption. Like, will you let me have the day of my state funeral? And instead, the last things are is we honor whatever it was, you know, this American hero, Tom Hanks. Yeah, right. That that's stolen from her. And she would, of course, take that. She would take Tom Hanks's death. Personally.
Yeah. I feel like that scene alone demonstrated so many different things. It demonstrated the importance of legacy and how you're going to affect the lives of everyone around you. And after all of that, after seven seasons, all we get is, oh, she reversed gay marriage permanently and she freed Tibet once.
Right.
So that was her legacy.
Freed and unfreed Tibet.
She had nothing else. But I think it also demonstrated our 24-hour news cycle and how everyone's so quick to jump onto the next story, but then we'll highlight one story for like 7 days in the mainstream news media, and it's going to be one story. Tom Hanks is dead. Tom Hanks is dead. Tom Hanks is dead. It's going to be that. Then it's going to be one-on-one interviews with Tom Hanks, his legacy. Then it's going to be something else with Tom Hanks until the next thing comes around, and then everyone's so quick to forget about it and go on to the next thing. So it just demonstrated like the lack of care and compassion for
they were savage to CNN. I mean, sort of, you know, the manner in which stuff was covered. You know, there's that one moment where the anchor, what the hell was that actor's name? He's so great too, Pete from 30 Rock, and you know, where he says that that Jonah is among the worst. It wasn't in the last episode; it was in the last season, where Jonah is among the worst politicians he's ever encountered, the dumbest danger to America, says destructive things, and then they say, when we come back, you know, we'll have Jonah's campaign rally from Iowa. It's like so. I mean, that's a little sign of no matter how much people said Trump, you know, but there was CNN, certainly Fox, and to some extent also, no, not even to some extent, MSNBC also covering him and giving him that time. And they did the exact same thing with Jonah. So I thought for some time that they were actually going to give. They did a nice job sort of leading us to believe, oh, it's Jonah who's going to win, right? You know, and even twice, once during the heart of the campaign, and then again you thought he was going to steal it at the convention.
Yeah. Just like the Hillary Clinton's going to win. The numbers are there, and then just, you know, being completely blindsided and then figuring out Trump wins.
Well, and I feel like one of the best parallels in this episode, I had to write down the line just because it was so perfect, it was Amy when she was trying to convince Lena to not choose Jonah. And she said, you cannot let an embittered, vindictive, narcissistic man-child be one heartbeat away from presidency, let alone be the president.
Yeah, no, that was a direct. Mm-hmm. Wow. That usually their shots at Trump were usually more subtle. I loved that, don't get me wrong, but that one was... we're talking about Trump here. Right? Yeah, right.
She might as well have just accidentally called him
that's
Donald.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
That could have been their Starbucks. That could have been their Starbucks cup. It's just let one Trump out.
It was an accident, just like on Game of Thrones.
Right.
All right. Well, guys, any last overall thoughts on the episode?
I feel like the whole episode was her selling every single principle she had that she never really had to begin with, and then showing the isolation that comes with the power that you've sought. You know, you're not surrounded by anyone at this point because you've stepped on everyone to get to the top instead of worked with everyone and been appreciative of the people who helped you get to where you are. You know, she didn't win the election fairly, and I mean, it's evident that she's not enjoying the presidency either.
Yeah.
I think it'll hold up. You know, the show adapted to Trump, clearly. You know, it didn't have as clear an enemy. It had sort of politics in general. But now so many there are so many ignorant people that we now see in positions of power in the media and clearly in politics at the highest levels of politics, that the show, that's again, I think significantly the show got much crazier, got much more farcical, took much bigger risks starting in season 6 and 7. But by the end, I really thought they delivered on those, and I imagine this is still going to be funny, you know, 10 years from now.
Yeah,
I think the only way it won't be relevant is if we take money out of politics, in which case none of this is going to make sense.
That's right.
This whole whole show revolves around money and politics and how that influences elections. So
we'll be like, well, none of this is realistic.
Everyone would be like, none of this is realistic. The money, politics, what?
Yeah, that's true.
I guess the message is take money out of politics and we won't have this mess.
So the show was created by Armando Iannucci, and I just want to, you know, I think it was 2008, but his really wonderful movie about the run-up to the Iraq War, which is really like it's almost like the pilot episode of Veep called In the Loop, which is as funny a movie as I have seen in some time, and one of the funniest movies I've seen in the last 10 years. And then a movie he made last year, Death of Stalin. If any Veep fan should check out In the Loop and Death of Stalin, both made by the creator of Veep, and they are both incredibly funny.
Nice. Yeah, I think through and through that was one thing that the ensemble and the writing are probably the two things that stood out for me the whole time. I mean, the show is so well done from top to bottom, but what an ensemble cast. I don't know I'm going to ask the most impossible question ever.
Yeah.
Favorite in the ensemble?
Selena. Yeah. Honestly, this is the easiest answer, and it's very straightforward. But Selena, I mean, from Seinfeld to this, she does a phenomenal job. She's so funny. I mean,
there's no literally. I would give all of the main 10 characters A's. Like, yeah. I don't think there was a week. I mean, you know, Reed Scott, who played Dan Egan. I mean, that guy is so funny. And Gary Cole is a genius.
Gary Cole is one of my favorites.
And by the way, Reed Scott does a really good Gary Cole impersonation. So, and Timothy Simons, you know, who played Jonah. But I think Timothy Simons and Anna Chlumsky, because I think those were the hardest roles to play. Because easily Jonah could have become so stupid that you ignored him. And somehow he managed to ground that part in some little tiny moments of reality, just like the way he asks his mom for, you know, can I have some sliced apples with the mac and cheese, you know, stuff like that. And the way he went from enraged to calm, right? I mean, he's such a talented actor. But Anna Chlumsky had actual sort of emotional ups and downs, and I think she consistently delivered them.
Yeah, same. I mean, all across the board, but I'd have to go with Anna Chlumsky myself just because I think in a lot of episodes, too, specifically, I would call her out as one of my favorites. Just the levels that she hit and the intensity that she brought to that character just every single time, she just hit the mark.
She had more notes to play, and she played them all really well, yeah.
Beautifully. Well, let's chat it up with you a little bit, Ben. Learn a little bit more about you. I think Mina wanted to – we have a couple things to jump into.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to get an understanding of how you got into Veep in the first place and that intersection of politics with comedy.
Yeah, well, I mean, politics is funny. It's fun to talk about politics. I grew up in D.C. around politics. My dad was Bobby Kennedy's press secretary and ran George McGovern's campaign in 1972. He ran for Congress, lost in 1976. You know, he was involved with Ted Kennedy's insurgent challenge to Jimmy Carter in 1980, with Gary Hart in 84, and then again in attempt in 88. You know, politics always in our family. That was well before movies for me growing up was politics. So, and my dad was funny, and you know, politics is funny. I mean, you know, funny things happen, and we have, you know, for 240 years in this country sort of consistently elevated unqualified people to incredibly important positions. I mean, especially in state legislatures are filled with people who ought to be in Congress and who ought to be in prison, right? Like, there's a nice mix of people who seem like they should go back to eighth grade and people who are like, why don't we have this guy or this woman in Congress, you know? So I took to it, you know. My favorite movies are about politics, and it's rare that a movie gets politics exactly right. You know, there's some great ones, but a lot of them get it wrong and oversimplify it and make it silly. And while this made it silly, they didn't really get the crux of it wrong. They got a lot of it right. And my dad loved it. She died 4 years ago, but he was into Veep.
I think we talked about it early on in the season that I remember reading they had polled a bunch of White House staffers and asked out of all the current political shows on TV what's kind of most accurate to what life is really mm-hmm. like. And Veep was the outstanding winner in that poll.
Yeah, I did an interview once with not too long ago with Samantha Power. Because I think she did. She was the focus of a movie called The Last Year. I think it was called The Last Year. I hope it was. By Greg Barker and it was a documentary on the last year of Obama's foreign policy team. Samantha Power and John Kerry and Ben Rhodes. But Obama was in it too. And And in a Q&A with Samantha Power, she said that what got her to some extent – somebody asked a question. Not I didn't ask it, unfortunately. Sort of what was the thing that surprised you most that you were unable to do? Like one thing about politics that you had heard when you got into power that not so much surprised you but that you were unable to accomplish. And she said what really gets you is the inability to do more than one thing. Like – she's one of the smartest people out there, right? An enormously accomplished woman. And she said, man, you get – like if you're worried about regime change in Egypt, you can't do anything else, right? Then that takes up all your energy. It's incredibly hard to do more than one thing at a time. She didn't quite understand why that was even, but that's clearly something that we – and I think Veep sort of gets that they're trying to do one thing and then something else happens and it just totally throws everybody off course.
There's so many issues right now to worry about with the way our society is. What's one issue for you that is the most important that we need immediate change on in terms of either policy or just reform?
Well, you mentioned one. Certainly money out of politics would make a huge difference. I feel like money would still find its way back in. But I think we'd get a long way if we made it incredibly easy and incredibly attractive for people to vote. And if anybody who tried to keep people from voting were run out of American politics forever, no one should ever take a stand that makes it harder for Americans to go to the polls. Mm-hmm. And for 50 years now, longer, but certainly since the Voting Rights Act, you know, the last 54 years, we've had one side aggressively try to keep people from voting. And, you know, I'm always pleased that I come down on the side no matter what. And this is not all – it has not always been a Democrat and Republican issue, but it is a – there is a right and wrong on this issue. And if the more people vote, the stronger the country is.
No. It becomes an actual democracy then where you can actually represent the interests of the people
comes
that are voting.
A little closer to a democracy and you know, and you blunt – and, you know, until we get money out of politics, one way to blunt the influence of money is to get regular people voting. And the efforts to keep minorities, poor folks, frequently poor minorities from voting is, I mean, it is shameful and it is un-American. And everyone who has played a role in it is not fit to serve in the United States of America.
Hmm. Well said. Well, speaking of not served to not fit to serve, I know Mina also has a little something that was written by someone not fit to serve.
I do.
Little special treat here.
Oh. Why don't you show our audience your little present in here?
Oh, fantastic. What do we have here?
The anticipation.
Oh, that's awesome. There we go. Selina Meyer. A woman first woman. That's so great.
You can flip through the pages. It's really funny. It's an autobiography.
Is it? So it's this is an actual book.
This is an actual book. It's an actual autobiography about her life, and it is hilarious. I haven't read all of it, but I've gone through some of the pages and seen. You'll really enjoy this one.
That's so great. Yeah.
If not, there's a Barnes & Noble gift receipt right there.
But also, no. I'm definitely keeping it. But Richard Splett, dedication. Role model, romance. There's like four pages of the romance with Richard Splett daydreaming about drugs and it's great. It's so good.
Like what a great idea for that show to actually make this book.
It's great. The style of writing is honestly hilarious. It mirrors the writing on Veep. So it's
here, page 107. Okay, what's the White House like? It's a dump. That's what Trump said, right? In its defense, it was built a long time ago, more than 100 years ago, when I suppose standards were different. We all know that great story about President Taft in the bathtub. But while standards of luxury, as well as standards of living generally, may have improved very considerably since the White House was built and considered luxurious, the people, quote, in charge of the White House, whoever they may be, seem to have made little effort to keep pace.
I forgot Taft got stuck in the bathtub.
That's right,
I now remember that story.
When I took notes in college, William Howard Taft was always abbreviated in my notes, BBT, for Big Bill Taft.
That's great. Well, speaking, we're going to do one quote. We have a special segment. Speaking of things that Trump have said, this is called What Trump's Veep.
Yes. Okay. So in the
this is either a Trump quote or a line from Veep.
Yes, it's either a Trump quote or a line from Veep.
All right.
We build a school. We build a road. They blow up the school. We build another school. We build another road. They blow them up. We build again. In the meantime, we can't get an effing school in Brooklyn.
That's got to be Veep.
That's actually Donald Trump.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that is Donald Trump. Can we do one more?
Yeah, it's okay with me.
You go to the hospital, you have a broken arm, you come out, you are a drug addict with this crap.
I mean, that so rattled me, the first one. I will go again with Veep.
That's actually Donald Trump.
Oh, my God.
Let's do a third one, actually.
Let me get one. Let's get one. Crying out loud. Do I have to give the book back if I miss this one?
No, the book is yours regardless. I think my positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with.
That's Veep.
That's Donald Trump. No. I thought third time would be a shame. Give the book back. For more great quotes, either go to google.com and type in Trump embarrassing quotes or Selena Meyer, a woman first. First woman.
Pull it right from the book. Don't feel bad. I think all season we're running at about a 20% rate right now. Correct answers.
These are so difficult. That's what's so scary about Veep.
Super fun, super terrifying. All right. Well, again, Ben, thank you so much for coming in.
Amy, Mina, thank you very much for having me.
Excellent. Well,
I'll be here for season 8. I look forward to seeing you.
Yes, yeah. Let that happen.
Predictions. All right. Well, Mina, let us know where we can find both of you online, what you guys are working on right now.
You can find me on MinaWahab.com or go to my Instagram, Mina Makes Magic.
Whatever. Fine. Ben Manx 777. It's whatever. That doesn't matter. Look, every Thursday night throughout May and in June, Turner Classic Movies, World War II movies, all in every primetime Thursday night, all in commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion, June 6th, 1944, most consequential day of the 20th century.
That's very cool. And I'm Amy Maestri. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Amy Maestri. And for more comedy and politics, I do the SNL after show as well. We have 2 episodes left of the season if you want to tune in on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific. Sorry about that, guys. Thank you so much. Bye, Veep.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.